And this is a special session for the case of the League of Women Voters versus Michigan Secretary of State, file number 353654. And we have oral arguments scheduled at this time. And if Jeff will bring them into the courtroom, I'd appreciate it. The virtual courtroom, I should say. I believe we have both sides on already. Is that correct?
You hear me? This is Stanton Jones.
Please state your name again.
This is Stanton Jones for the plaintiffs.
Okay. And we have an attorney for the Secretary of State.
Yes, Your Honor. Assistant Attorney General Heather Meingast on behalf of the Secretary of State.
Okay. Now, as my understanding is that there are quite a few other attorneys that were we've given permission to appear before our court today. Is anybody else going to be sharing the oral argument with you?
No, for the plaintiffs, it will be only me today, Your Honor.
Okay. Okay. You realize you have a half an hour. Do you want any time for rebuttal?
Yes, I'll save 5 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Okay. And before we get started, let me say we have three judges from the Court of Appeals here today. Judge Elizabeth Gleiser from the 2nd District, and we have Judge Roden from the 1st District, and I am Judge David Sawyer from the 3rd District. We mix and match, and we will try to do the best we can to lead you along in the areas that we think are important for you. So with that, you may start your oral argument.
Wonderful, thank you. And just to confirm, you can hear me all right? The volume is good?
Yes. All judges can hear you?
Yes.
This is Judge Reardon. It sounds good.
Okay.
May it please the court, I'm Stanton Jones from Arnold and Porter, and I represent the plaintiffs. Mandamus is warranted in this case to compel the Secretary of State to direct local election officials with respect to three aspects of Michigan's absentee voting system. First, with respect to counting absentee ballots that are mailed rather than received by Election Day. Second, as to the timely processing of applications and issuance of absentee ballots to voters. And third, providing prepaid postage for voters to return their absentee ballots. Turning to the first issue, the century-old statutory deadline requiring that absentee ballots be received by Election Day violates multiple provisions of the Michigan Constitution. I plan to focus my presentation today on the absentee voting clause in Article 2, Section 4, which the people of Michigan adopted by an overwhelming margin in 2018. Under the plain and unambiguous text of the absentee voting clause, absentee ballots that are mailed by Election Day must be counted, even if received after Election Day. And there are four features of the clause's plain text that compel this conclusion. First, the clause gives every Michigan voter the express right to, quote, vote an absentee ballot during 40 days before an election, and under long-standing Michigan election laws, including the statutory instructions that are given to every Michigan absentee voter, to vote an absentee ballot simply means to fill out the ballot. Second, the clause gives every Michigan voter the express right to choose to submit their voted absentee ballot, quote, by mail. So every voter has the right to mail their voted absentee ballot during the 40 days. Third, the clause is expressly self-executing. This means a couple things. It means that the clause is judicially enforceable without further legislation. It also means that any supplemental legislation must, quote, further the exercise of the constitutional right and make it more available. And fourth, the Constitution, by its own terms, mandates that the absentee voting clause be, quote, liberally construed in favor of voters' rights in order to effectuate its purposes. And so
what's the interface, or what's the play between the self-executing nature of the constitutional provision and the limits of our authority to grant a mandamus? And let me make the question a little bit clearer. Well, certainly there's case law that explains what self-executing means in the terms of a constitutional provision. You've asked this court to put time limits, or to basically construct a time frame for the counting of ballots that arrive after the date of the election, correct?
Yes, correct. That is part of our request for relief.
All right. And our case law on the limits of granting a mandamus, a writ, basically include that the act be ministerial, that is, the counting of the ballots, or the order to count the ballots, which our case law defines as a duty to be performed with such precision and certainty as to leave nothing to discretion or judgment. How do you deal with that requirement for mandamus in the context of the relief that you're seeking? And does it matter that the constitutional provision that we're dealing with also requires that we factor in the self-executing nature of the provision? I know that's kind of a complex, all over the place question, but hopefully you got it.
I do get it. And I think that there are three aspects to the question, which I'd like to take in turn. One is the meaning of ministerial. The other is the request for relief relating to an outside deadline for receipt of ballots. And then the third piece is how the self-executing nature of the clause plays into that. So starting with the ministerial requirement, an act is ministerial if it involves no exercise of discretion or judgment. And it's well established that this court determines whether an act is ministerial after deciding the relevant constitutional or statutory question using the normal tools of constitutional and statutory interpretation. That's made clear in cases including Citizens Protecting Michigan's Constitution, Attorney General versus State Board of Canvassers, and other cases. So using the ordinary interpretive tools here, the absentee voting clause expressly requires counting absentee ballots that are mailed by election day. Once the court so holds, it is ministerial for the Secretary of State merely to comply with her duty under Michigan law to direct local clerks to comply with that constitutional requirement. And, so, and notably...
Well, I guess, so are you saying just leave that the court's order could leave it at that and not instruct her to do so within a certain number of days after the election?
So that gets to, I think, the second part of your question, which is our request for relief as to an outside deadline. Really quickly on ministerial, the last thing I would say is that the Secretary of State, who of course is the one that would carry this out, has not disputed that the request here is ministerial. That element has not been disputed. On the outside deadline, I have two points I'd like to make. First, in granting mandamus relief, the court has authority to, quote, enter any judgment or order or grant further or different relief as the case may require in its discretion and on terms it deems just. That's from the Citizens Protect.
Counsel, yes. Not to interrupt you, but my real problem is you're asking us to legislate. Usually when a legislature decides a time limit that they're going to set a time at 8 o'clock, they'll have hearings. If they want to move it to the next day, that's fine. But you're asking us to arbitrarily come up with 6 days, 8 days, whatever, to be counted. Aren't we really becoming a legislative body by doing that? If we go that far, let's say, for example, we agree with you. If we agree with you that they count beforehand by just mailing, and that's your argument, correct? Once you vote and you put it in the mail, it counts. That's your argument. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. If it's mailed by election day, yes.
Yeah, by election day. Now the question comes, if we decide that, do we even have to decide the 6 days or that, or do we just leave it up in the air and say, well, that was unconstitutional to not count them and leave it to the legislature or someone else to figure it out? Because we aren't in a position to legislate, are we?
So that's a good way of framing it. I don't believe that this is legislative, but directly to your question, you do not have to answer it. If there are concerns about 6 days or 8 days you mentioned, the court can merely order that the secretary has a clear legal duty with respect to counting ballots that are mailed by election day. And in that scenario, if that is what the court chooses to do, the deadline for receipt of absentee ballots by local clerks would simply revert to 14 days after the election by the natural operation of a different statute, a statute that has not been challenged by anyone. That is MCL 168.822. That is the statutory deadline for the counties to complete their canvasses with respect to the election. And so if the court orders only that there is a constitutional right to have your absentee ballot counted if it is mailed by election day, any absentee ballots that are mailed by election day must be received within 14 days to be counted. Again, just by natural operation of 168.822. This court would not need to speak to it any further.
Maybe you can answer this question for me. There's a certain burden on a voter. A voter has a burden to vote, correct? Register, and then you get to vote. The Prop 3 basically said, hold it, you don't need excuses. You don't have to be over 65, or you don't have to be an invalid. You can vote. Anybody can get an absentee ballot. And it said it can count one. You can mail it in. You have 40 days before to do it. You can mail it in. And the statute has always had 8 o'clock, the election day, or it says you can deliver it in person. So it gives them an option either way. So if you come up to you're kind of close to the deadline, you go, well, I'm going to just drop it off. Doesn't that satisfy the intent of this Proposition 3 by allowing them to do either way?
No, we're not disenfranchising anybody. On its face, by its plain and unambiguous terms, the absentee voting clause gives every Michigan voter the equal right to submit their absentee ballot in person or by mail as they choose. Those are the explicit words. It says choose, mm-hmm. It says every voter, and it says in person or by mail with no distinction between the two. That is simply the plain and unambiguous text of the clause.
So, thank you.
Can yes. I go back to the legislative question, if you don't mind me interrupting, Mr. Jones? Isn't there a bill pending before the House, the Michigan House, right now regarding the time limits for when ballots could be received?
I'm going to have to apologize. I'm not familiar with the pending bill.
It's House Bill 5807. It was introduced May 20th. So that's dealing directly on point with the 8 o'clock deadline. So what I think you're asking us to do is to step into the place of the legislature, and rather than going through the normal political process, to short-circuit it.
No, Your Honor, quite the opposite. We're seeking to enforce a constitutional provision that, unlike a pending bill in the legislature, has actually been adopted by the people of Michigan 2 years ago by an overwhelming margin. The people adopted for themselves a self-executing, expressly self-executing provision.
Is the 14-day provision self-executing?
The 14-day provision is a statute. It's not a constitutional provision. The 14 days is the statutory deadline for counties to complete their canvasses with respect to election. What is self-executing?
But that's not part of the referendum that was passed, correct?
So that's correct. There's Proposal 3, which established the absentee voting clause, a state constitutional right to vote and mail absentee ballots during the 40 days. And then as I described before, there is a pre-existing statute that sets a 14-day deadline after the election for counties to complete their canvasses. And so in response to the earlier questions expressing concern or a question about where does the 6 day come from, the Secretary of State and plaintiffs agree that 6 days is an appropriate deadline for receipt.
And that's Mr. Jones, these Zoom conferences are taking a long time for me to get used to. So sorry for interrupting you. That's exactly what House Bill 5807 is asking for as well.
Sure. So I don't think that
my issue is, so you're asking us to adopt a statute and I guess graft it on to the referendum that was passed.
No, Your Honor. We are asking simply that the court grant mandamus to enforce the self-executing constitutional right. The constitutional right, to be clear, is to have your absentee ballot counted if it is mailed by election day. That is an express self-executing constitutional right that the people of Michigan gave to themselves by an overwhelming margin in 2018, and the Constitution declares that that right must be liberally construed in favor of voters' rights.
What you're saying then is it's not subject to discretion in the sense of the counting has to be done at the latest, no discretion on the part of the Secretary of State, by the end of the 14-day deadline.
There is no discretion on the part of the Secretary of State with respect to counting ballots mailed by election day, and there is no discretion with respect to the counties must complete their canvasses within 14 days. That's just pre-existing Michigan election law. So on its face then, the 100-year-old statutory received by election day deadline facially violates the newly adopted self-executing absentee voting clause, because the statute requires the rejection of ballots that are mailed by voters during the 40 days. And under the constitutional provision, those absentee ballots mailed by election day must be counted. Notably, the Secretary of State agrees now that the received by election day violates the absentee voting clause, and that the clause unambiguously requires counting ballots that are mailed by election day. So once it's decided, switching gears just a little bit, once it's decided that the absentee voting clause requires counting ballots that are mailed by election day, the Secretary has a clear legal duty for purposes of mandamus to direct local clerks to comply with that constitutional requirement. And so, to begin, as I mentioned earlier, it's well established that the court determines whether a public official has a clear legal duty after deciding, in this case, the relevant constitutional question, using all the normal tools of constitutional interpretation. That interpretation is step one. And again, that's cases like Citizens Protecting Michigan's Constitution, Attorney General v. State Board of Canvassers. And once the court, applying the normal interpretive tools, concludes that the absentee voting clause plainly and unambiguously requires counting absentee ballots that are mailed by election day, as the parties agree it does, then the question becomes, does the Secretary have a clear legal duty to direct local clerks to comply? And the clear answer is yes. The statute MCL 168.31 explicitly mandates that the Secretary, quote, shall direct local election officials as to the proper methods of conducting elections. And the case law is clear, cases like Hare cited in our reply brief, that local election officials must comply with the Secretary's directives under that provision. And here, that means the Secretary shall direct local election officials to comply with the plain and unambiguous terms of the absentee voting clause by counting absentee ballots that are mailed by voters by Election Day. So putting those items together, the secretary has a clear legal duty under Michigan law to direct local clerks to comply with the absentee voting clause by counting ballots that are mailed by Election Day. And notably, on this point as well, the secretary acknowledges that if the absentee voting clause requires counting ballots that are mailed by Election Day, as the parties agree it does, then the secretary does have a clear legal duty to direct clerks to comply with this requirement. The secretary acknowledges that clear legal duty on page 16 of the secretary's merits brief. Unless there are further questions about the absentee voting clause, I would turn to our other counts. So on the second count in the complaint, plaintiffs seek three forms of relief with respect to processing applications and issuing absentee ballots under the absentee voting clause and the statute MCL 168.761. And the secretary fails to address two of those forms of requested relief. First, the secretary does not address that local clerks, despite the adoption of the absentee voting clause in 2018, have not been allowing for in-person absentee voting starting on the 40th day before an election. So going back to the absentee voting clause's plain and unambiguous terms.
Counsel, why don't you just bring an action against the clerks that are doing that, if there's a problem? My understanding is the Secretary of State says, look, we've directed them to do this. And if there's a problem in a county or a municipality, why wouldn't you bring a mandamus against them?
So two responses, Your Honor. First, the Secretary has not directed local clerks with respect to two of the three issues that we identified. There is no direction from the Secretary to local clerks with respect to allowing in-person absentee voting starting on the 40th day before an election in line with the absentee voting clause. There has been no direction from the Secretary about that, nor has there been any direction from the Secretary to local clerks with respect to beginning to mail absentee ballots to voters at the 40-day mark, again, in line with the terms of the absentee voting clause. And that absence of direction from the secretary since the adoption of the clause in 2018 has had significant results. To your honor's inquiry about possibly bringing individual lawsuits, the reports have been that there are hundreds of cities and townships, more than 400 by some counts, that have not been complying with the new constitutional requirements of the absentee voting clause.
Do you have a list of those? I didn't see anything. Maybe you've already filed it, but I certainly would like to see a list of those.
So I can point, Your Honor, to the relevant pages in the appendix where it describes that there are more than 400. I don't believe that there are an actual list of them, but there is reference to the fact that it is more than 400 cities or townships, and that's in the appendix at pages 34 to 43 is a series of materials concerning the failure of many local clerk's offices to comply with these requirements.
400 just strikes me as a, I don't know how many various districts there are or the clerks are on the state. Seems like a very, very high number. I mean, you might be absolutely correct, and I remember seeing that, but I don't know where those are, and that would be helpful.
Michigan's election system is very localized. There are more than 1,500 individual cities and townships. The Secretary of State's Council may be able to speak to this more directly and knowledgeably than I can, but my understanding is that there are more than 1,500 cities and townships, and the evidence that we submitted refers to more than 400 of those that have been non-compliant since the adoption of the absentee voting clause. And again, the secretary has issued no direction with respect to local clerks on those two issues, the in-person absentee voting during the 40 days and also beginning to mail absentee ballots to voters starting at the 40-day mark as required by the clause.
So that's almost a third, about 100, by your estimation.
That's what the evidence indicates, yes, Your Honor. In any event, that is what the evidence indicates. Even at half of that, you can imagine how difficult it would be to bring even 200 or even 100 individual lawsuits. And the bottom line is that that's simply not required of plaintiffs. The secretary has a clear legal duty under Michigan law to direct local clerks with respect to the conduct of Michigan elections. And the secretary has not given a direction with respect to these two issues, in-person absentee voting during the 40 days, as well as beginning to mail absentee ballots at the 40-day mark. The third aspect of this claim by plaintiffs is that the absentee voting clause and Section 168.761 mandate that clerks, quote, immediately send absentee ballots to voters who apply in the 40 days before an election. And the word immediately means what it says. It means immediately. So clerks can't wait on this. They can't wait until there's some certain number of applications before they process them or mail them. They can't sit on desks. And even under a generous interpretation of the word immediately, this work should be done within 24 hours of receiving an application. And the secretary has not met her obligations with respect to this issue simply by recommending or suggesting in a manual that clerks issue ballots within 24 hours of receipt of an application. As I mentioned before, just as a reminder, the manual that's referenced in the briefing, the secretary's guidance manual, says nothing about either making available in-person absentee voting during the 40 days under the absentee voting clause or beginning to mail absentee ballots on the 40th day, again, consistent with the clause.
You're getting close to your 5 minutes left you want to have. And I want to ask you one thing before you, I think you've covered that section that you're talking about. But when you deal with, where are you finding the authority to somehow say that it's mandated that the state have local municipalities and counties pay for the postage? And if they do, if we say they do, isn't that a Headley question too?
So the absentee voting clause adopted by the people of Michigan themselves creates an explicit constitutional right, and it's no defense to a constitutional violation simply to say that compliance would cost money. I'll give you an analogy.
But the question is, you can also bring it in. There's two ways to do it. You can hand it in or you can mail it in. And nowhere in this Prop 3 does it deal with any of these things. You're taking the quantum leap to now say, one, you're talking about the timeline. Two, you're out in that argument, I understand, but now you're taking it into the concept that now postage must be paid too. And how is that done? Do we send it out to everybody, or and who pays for it? The state? Does the state reimburse the municipality or the county?
So two responses, Your Honor. First, it is no answer to say that people can bring in their absentee ballots in person. The absentee voting clause on its face creates an explicit, unambiguous constitutional right in every Michigan voter to choose to mail the ballot if that is what they choose. It places in-person submission of absentee ballots and mailing of absentee ballots on equal footing. There is a constitutional right with respect to both. And again, with respect to the prepayment of postage, It's simply no answer that that it would cost money. The state can't refuse to provide public defenders to indigent criminal defendants on the theory that it doesn't have enough money to pay for public defenders. The state can't refuse to install ramps for wheelchair accessibility in compliance with the ADA simply because it costs money. And the same is true here. The people of Michigan gave themselves an explicit constitutional right, again, to choose to mail their absentee ballots if they choose. And that right to be vindicated requires that postage be prepaid by the state. I'll reserve the balance of my time unless there are
questions. You have 5 minutes. Any questions for the other judges? Have any questions? Okay.
Nothing for me.
Okay, you may proceed.
Good morning, Heather Meingast, on behalf of the Secretary of State Benson. Just to know, unfortunately, I lost audio for about half of Brother Counsel's argument, and couldn't hear the questioning either. So unfortunately, I'm a little bit at a loss as to some of the dialogue that went on.
Yeah, Counsel, that's one of the problems with Zoom, and I'm looking forward to getting back in a courtroom.
Yes, me too, Your Honor. So. I think, as the court already knows, we're in a little bit of a unique situation here to the extent that the Secretary does agree that Article 2, Section 4, as amended by Proposal 3, does, in fact, provide for the right to submit an AV ballot by mail during the 40 days before an election, which we believe, you know, we have interpreted to include all the way through the election itself, so the end of the election day.
Does that bind us as a court?
No, I don't. The fact that two parties might agree on the construction of the Constitution, I wouldn't think binds this court in any way. The court is the final arbiter of what the language of the Constitution means. It's odd in the sense that you do not have an advocate, you know, arguing for a contrary result, but that doesn't preclude the court from disagreeing with both advocates in front of you. That's my perspective.
Well, that's fine. Go ahead.
So, as I said, I missed a lot of the questions. I'm not sure where the questions were on this textual argument about Article. Section 4, the 41G, as put forward in our brief,
I think one of the big questions that came up was if we do what Brother Counsel asked us to do, the League of Women Voters asked us to do, aren't we really legislating on the concept of the time dealing 8 p.m. versus 6 days later or 8 days or 2 days, whatever it is? And should we be doing that? Now, I can understand the argument saying, okay, we find it unconstitutional not to accept them. But to go any further than that, I think we've become a legislator.
Unconstitutional. Yes, right. So if the court was persuaded by the construction that, yes, that we voters do have the right all the way through the 40 days, which we believe means through the end of election day to cast an AV ballot by mail, to put it in the mailbox. Through that day, the court can simply hold that and leave the rest of the remedy for explication for supplemental legislation to be enacted by the legislature to then decide what happens after it. The constitutional right goes only so far as it does. It simply stops at, yes, you can put a ballot in the mail on election day.
The Secretary is not really taking the position that the constitutional right doesn't go so far as to have the ballot counted, is she?
No,
isn't it beyond question that that the right to vote includes the right to have the vote counted?
Right. If the right to submit it extends all the way through election day, as we've argued, then obviously the right, there is a right to have that properly submitted ballot counted.
But I'm making a distinction, a very clear distinction between submission and counting. And I want to be sure I understand the Secretary's position, because I did not understand it after reading your brief, the brief.
Well, certainly.
The Secretary is not taking the position, is she, that the constitutional right is fulfilled once the voter actually physically votes the ballot. The constitutional right is only fulfilled once the state counts the votes, right?
Right. We would understand the to vote language, meaning that to include the right to submit it, and that by submitting it, that means, you know, putting it in the mail, it goes to the clerks, you know, by election day. And then obviously to go with that, there would be the concomitant right to have that properly submitted ballot counted.
Okay. All right. So what you're saying then is you agree basically with the entirety of the plaintiff's claim here on the first issue, except for the deadline that the plaintiffs would impose. Am I right? Or have I read too much into your concessions?
No, I think that's largely right. I think how we get to the same answer is maybe a little bit different as far as analysis of the language itself. But at the end, we would be in agreement with the idea that the Constitution requires the permission of voters to submit by mail through the end of election day, and that properly submitted ballots by the end of election day would thereafter be counted. You know, mail ballots would be counted.
Maybe you missed this part of the argument of opposing counsel, but he proposed that perhaps the clear legal duty on the part of the secretary, would extend for 14 days. That is, the clear legal duty to count the votes would extend for 14 days. He invoked MCL 168.822, which is the statutory deadline for the Board of Canvassers to certify the results. What's wrong with that position?
I think, as you saw in our brief, we agreed with what was, to me, their principal position in their brief was to use the 6-day period for provisional ballots. So in the absence of supplementing legislation that the legislature would act to directly implement the right, if this court declares that there's a right to have ballots counted if received, you know, mailed by election day and thus counted after election day, you know, we would either grasp onto existing statutes to provide guidance in the interim of enacting supplemental legislation to get us through this cycle.
Right. In other words, so to cut to it, you'd have essentially a default position if the legislature doesn't act. The default would be 168.822. I also discovered doing my research that the secretary, and I'm sure I can find it here in a second, but there's an existing, what I'll call mailbox rule for our active duty military who mail in their ballots, and those ballots are potentially received after election day. Those are still counted in certain circumstances, aren't they?
There's a special rule for UOKAVA ballots, right?
Right.
But I don't think the UOKAVA rule necessarily applies. And I would just push back on
that. I agree, it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. By its terms, it doesn't apply. But it demonstrates that the secretary, without is accustomed to counting ballots that arrive after the date of the election.
There would be some ballots that come late, and part of that's because of federal litigation and all that we have to make that accommodation. So, but yes, there are rare circumstances where we are counting ballots after election day for military voters.
It's not just military, by the way. It's anyone who lives out of the country.
Right, overseas and UOKAVA ballots, right.
Right.
Counsel, let me ask you this. The right to vote is inherent in our Constitution, correct? And Proposal 3 basically liberalized the area to make it easier for people to vote. That was the purpose, because not everyone can get to the polls that day and they don't have a special reason. So that's what it was for. But aren't elections regulated by the state of Michigan? and they put certain parameters. You can't be so many feet to the poles and have advertising, or you've got to have poll workers, two of one party, two of another. All sorts of regulations go in. And the 8 o'clock was a regulation. And so they're arguing that, at least as to the 8 o'clock, somehow Prop 3, without ever mentioning the time, mandates that. And I seem you tend to agree with that. Is that correct?
That's correct. Right. Certainly the constitutional language is could always be clearer, just as we have, you know.
And on every on every ballot, when you send out an absentee ballot, it does say it has to be received by 8 p.m., does it not?
The
notice is given to the voter. The voter has notice, and the voter knows that they can either mail it in or they can bring it in person.
Yes. Currently, the instructions all say that for absent voter ballots.
And can you please answer the question of, do you agree that postage should be paid?
No, we do not agree that postage should be paid.
And why?
Well, I think as explained in that section of our brief, I found, nor could they point to any sort of textual support that there is a right to vote without any kind of vote, whether it's in person or an 80 ballot, without the implication of the imposition of any cost at all. They're just the fact that the Constitution gives them a right to vote an 80 ballot by mail, it's a real stretch, I think, to read somewhere that that text also says it has to be done for free or at no cost to the voter. I mean, this requirement for postage is as old as the requirement that AV ballots be received by the end of election day. We're talking about, you know, 50, 60, 70 year old requirement that people, that voters have always had to put postage on their AV ballots. So textually, there's textually no support in our constitutional language that says that's a right and that has to be honored. So the question is, then the analysis would go to, would just be a straightforward analysis. Is this a burden on the right to vote by AB ballot? So it's essentially just another, you know, burden analysis. And is there a burden? All election laws impose some amount of burden to some extent on the right to vote, right? That's why the federal courts shifted to sort of an Anderson verdict analysis instead of trying to do all of these on a strict construction type analysis, that all election laws burden voters to some extent. So the question is, does putting 55 cents requiring voters to get a 55 cent stamp to put on their AV return envelope so they can send it back a severe burden on a voter? And as explained in our brief, no, it's not. It's simply one of the additional many burdens that voters have to that they encounter in exercising the franchise. Is it a burden? Yes, but it's a minimal burden. And the state's interests and the courts have recognized the interest in the state and our financial interests is a sufficient reason to shift some small portion of the cost of this AV ballot process to the voters themselves. The locals are already responsible for any number of costs related to the AV ballot process and holding elections themselves. And so requiring individual voters to spend 55 cents on a stamp in the big context of things, and assuming, again, all the other options you have for returning an AV ballot, you know, you can hand deliver it, you can have it dropped off, you can call the clerk and have her come pick it up, you know, that mitigates the inability if one does not have the 55 cent postage to put it on there. So, and sort of under Anderson verdict, with sliding scale kind of analysis, when you're analyzing the burden to the voter with the interests of the government, our interests, the governmental interests, outweigh the minor burden or inconvenience to voters that putting their own postage on their AV ballot.
Ms. Mindgast, I'd like to go back to the first issue, and that is, the secretary has conceded, as both you and opposing counsel have said, much of the plaintiff's case on the first issue. Is there any reason that the secretary believes that mandamus is not the proper form of relief?
I guess I'm not sure I understand. I mean, as to the first issue or the first sort of count.
Yes, correct. The first issue.
Right. I mean,
a direction to the Secretary of State to count the ballots that are received after the close, after the end of the day?
No, I think that on that point, if the court agrees with the construction made by the parties and holds that is the right, that a direction to the Secretary of State that is your duty now, I mean, this is the right, this is the clear legal right of the plaintiffs or voters, and then this is now the Secretary of State's duty to implement or direct or, you know, spread that right, you know, direct clerks to enforce the constitutional right that you have articulated. That would be, in some sense, you know, could this have been a declaratory judgment action with a request for injunctive relief? It might have been better styled that, but it's, in some sense, we've seen mandamus actions that have the same, you know, same actions, you know, citizens.
Right. So in other words, that sort of an order would fulfill the requirements of mandamus under our case law, correct?
Yeah, I think this is kind of an extreme example of a mandamus action, but looking at the cases say the court can decide a threshold constitutional question in the context of a mandamus case and then tell the secretary what her duty is after that determination.
Correct. And the case law is very clear on that. But you raise another interesting question, and that is Brother Counsel raised a court rule. Although he didn't identify that it was, he didn't give us the number, but I think it's 7.214 or 7.215, but it does give us the authority to go beyond the relief that's requested by the parties. And you mentioned relief in the nature of a declaratory judgment. Is that another option for the court?
I'm not sure that's what the, I'm, you know, the 7.2, whatever it is. I know what court rule we're all talking about.
7.216A7, yeah. They cited in their brief, and I think you responded to it as well.
I don't know that it goes so far as to provide
any judgment or order or grant further or different relief as the case may require.
I guess I'm not sure I have enough time to think about whether it actually contemplates an entire sort of different remedy than what's been pled here. This has been brought as a mandamus action and not a declaratory judgment action. So I guess I'm not sure I thought about it enough.
Okay, that's fair. Okay,
thank you.
Thanks.
Any further questions? Judge Reardon?
I have nothing.
Judge Glaser?
No. Thank you.
Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honors. Can everyone hear me, just to check?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay.
You're sounding good.
Excellent. So there were questions about the scope of relief, and specifically, again, with respect to the question of 6 days or what have you. Again, the court can do exactly what was indicated in one of Judge Scheuer's questions of the Secretary's counsel, and that is simply hold that the absentee voting clause requires counting ballots mailed by Election Day. That is the constitutional right. That is what the Constitution requires, and leave it at that. No more is necessary to be said. Again, in that case, the default under existing law would be the counties must complete their canvasses within 14 days. The legislature could change that by attempting to enact supplemental legislation, but that would be the default. If there are concerns about the scope of relief or how to identify it, the court need not address it. The court can simply hold that the absentee voting clause requires counting ballots, absentee ballots that are mailed by Election Day. That is all. There were a couple of questions about the scope of the Secretary's concessions or agreements with the plaintiffs on the absentee voting, on the first claim related to the received by deadline. So the bottom line is plaintiffs and the Secretary reached the same conclusion. And that is the absentee voting clause requires counting ballots that voters mail by Election Day. That is the constitutional right. That is the ultimate conclusion on which the parties agree. And while the Secretary's agreement with plaintiffs on that constitutional right may not bind the court in a technical or formal way, it does point up just how clear the absentee voting clause speaks to this specific issue of counting ballots that are mailed by Election Day. The constitutional text in this case is as plain and unambiguous as could be. There were questions about the state's authority just generally to regulate elections. The state's ability to regulate elections is, of course, confined by constitutional restraints. And the people of Michigan in 2018 imposed new constitutional restraints when, by an overwhelming margin, they amended their constitution to give themselves an express self-executing right to choose to mail absentee ballots and have those ballots counted during the 40 days. On the separate claim about, On the postage claim, the Secretary's counsel pointed out that the requirement to pay postage to return an absentee ballot is old. It's an old requirement to pay postage. And sure, that's true, but the absentee voting clause is new. And the absentee voting clause in Michigan's constitution, again, gives every voter, that's the word it uses, every voter, the right to choose to submit their ballot by mail if they choose. And voters can't choose to submit their ballots by mail. They can't exercise that explicit constitutional right if they can't afford or don't otherwise have access to postage. There were questions about whether mandamus is appropriate. This is an appropriate use of mandamus. It is. Just a few quick points on that. This court, of course, has original jurisdiction to hear an action for, quote, mandamus against a state officer. There's no dispute that the Secretary of State is an appropriate state officer subject to mandamus. In Citizens Protecting Michigan's Constitution and other cases, the Michigan Supreme Court said that, quote, mandamus is the appropriate remedy for a party to seeking to compel action by election officials. In the TESOL v. Department of Mental Health case, the Michigan Supreme Court said mandamus is the traditional remedy for compelling performance of legal duties by public officials. And this court and the Michigan Supreme Court on numerous occasions have granted mandamus, ordering both the Secretary of State and other election officials to comply with their legal obligations, including constitutional obligations. I would point the court to the Citizens Protecting Michigan's Constitution case, Attorney General versus State Board of Canvassers, the Wolverine Golf Club case cited in the briefs, and also the Elliott v. Secretary of State case. That case in particular goes to a suggestion about a possible declaratory judgment. And in Elliott, the Michigan Supreme Court interpreted a constitutional amendment, so similar to this case, and held that, declared what the constitutional right was and indicated that it would fashion mandamus relief if the secretary didn't comply. So again, similar to this case. So there are both, there's precedent both for issuing mandamus directly, and we believe that's absolutely warranted here. And the secretary, again, hasn't disputed that if the court adopts the interpretation of the absentee voting clause to require counting ballots mailed by Election Day, that mandamus is the appropriate relief under numerous cases. And Elliott also speaks to a declaration of the relevant constitutional right. So,
Counselor, you're about up. Your time's about up.
Sure. So just in closing, Your Honors, especially in the midst of a global pandemic, the stakes in this case are high for Michigan voters, but a simple proposition resolves plaintiff's claims. In 2018, long before any Michigan voter or any American had heard of COVID-19, before any of us would have imagined having this oral argument by video conference, the people of Michigan voted overwhelmingly to amend the Constitution, their Constitution, to give themselves an explicit state constitutional right to vote an absentee ballot by mail if they choose during the 40 days before an election. And the plain and unambiguous text of that clause is decisive and warrants judgment for plaintiffs. We ask that this court grant mandamus on all three counts in the complaint. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Any questions from the judges?
No, thank you.
I have none. Thank you. Good argument, Mr. Jones.
Thank you very much. I thank you both for arguing and putting up with the video conference, or I should say video courtroom. With that, we stand adjourned. Case is submitted.